This is Coffee at KYUK, conversation between friends and neighbors. Come in and have a cup.
Joining us for coffee is Brian Daniels, the bird biologist at the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge. He has been watching the last of the birds leave the delta, migrating south. Speaking with him is KYUK's Francisco Martinez Cuello.
Good morning, Brian. How are you?
Good morning. I am fine. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, how long have you been doing this job?
I have been here at the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge as a waterfowl biologist for a little over 7 years.
Wow. And so how long have you been? You've been living in Bethel for 7 years? Or?
Yeah, living in Bethel for 7 years. So I moved here July of 2016.
And are there any, like, trends that you've picked up on?
Even though it's been 7.5 years, it's, you know, still in terms of waterfowl and populations, it's hard to get a good sense of trends. It's kind of a short time period for that. But the one thing I can say is this has been the rainiest summer since I've been here.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, and is that good for waterfowl?
It can be good and bad. It all depends on when the rain is coming, and how much we get. So when nests are hatching in the first couple days around hatch, it can be detrimental to birds because they, aren't able to forage as much if the babies have to stay under the mothers. They get wet, so they get cold and hypothermic more easily. And so it can be detrimental, but in general, they're waterfowl. They like water, and so rain isn't that big of a deal for them. They can walk around, get wet, be fine. It's just kind of this first couple of days at hatch that it's more detrimental.
But also it has been a little cooler, has it not? Or
it has been, but not cooler than the last 40 years. It's been cooler than the last, say, 10 to 15 years in summertime, but the temperatures we had really are not that abnormal, and the birds can handle, the 50s, 60s just fine.
And you have a team of scientists, right? Or
correct, yeah. So every summer I hire technicians. Typically they're college students or recent graduates or graduate students that I have working for me. And it's normally 4 to 5 people that go out in the field and do waterfowl research with me during the summertime.
And how you also go out to the field a lot, So what is the average time that you do go out into the field?
Me being the lead biologist, I'm not out in the field nearly as much. I hire graduate students that have been here before. So that they know the project and know how to lead the project in the field, because I have to continue preparing for the next projects, get paperwork done, things like that. So I personally am not in the field as much as I used to be, but we have field camps operational basically from May 15th all the way through the end of August.
Wow.
For waterfowl.
And where are these field camps located at?
Most of them are on the coast. So on the Yukon Delta, most of the waterfowl nest in the coastal zone, right from the Bering Sea all the way probably to about 20 miles inland. That's where most of the birds nest. There are birds that nest further inland, but the highest density is there on the coast. So most of our research occurs there on the coastal zone. So Kigigak Island, which is about 20 miles west of Newtok, and then along the Kashunik River, which is it flows into Hazen Bay and is probably about 20 miles southwest of Chivac. And then we do have one camp at Kagun Lake, which is just to the east of the mud volcanoes here on the Yukon Delta, probably right smack dab in the middle of the Yukon Delta.
And I guess what are you researching or what are you finding? Is it strictly migration or?
No, so we study primarily nesting because birds are coming here to nest, and so we are studying the nest success, so the density of birds, how many birds are coming back within our plots, how many eggs are laying, if they're successful or not, and And then we're also banding in, individuals for survival analysis, so how well are individuals surviving from one year to the next. We also have other studies go on, particular studies like putting transmitters on birds to look at more fine-scale movements on where they're spending their time, how well they're surviving in different parts of the year, so we can break it up toward, you know, to summer, spring, fall, winter, and how well they're surviving and where they're spending their time. But also we're just banding birds for harvest estimates. So we put bands on birds. As hunters shoot them, they report the bands, and then we're able to determine how many bands were harvested and get an estimate of how many birds total were harvested in that population.
And why is that? Why is that important?
That's important so that we don't over-harvest certain species, and we can set regulations among the entire flyway. So Alaska, Canada, Washington, Oregon, California, Idaho, Nevada, so that we have regulations that will provide hunter opportunity, but also not be a detriment to the populations. So we use that information for that.
And what's the most popular species that we harvest?
Well, here on the Yukon Delta, it all really depends on individual and where on the Yukon Delta you are. So in the springtime, one of the most coveted on the coast is probably the emperor goose. People really like harvesting that bird, even though that bird, breeding ecology of that bird cannot handle a lot of harvest. It is one of the most preferred, as well as black brant. They both taste really good. But white-fronted geese, Pacific white-fronted geese, are really popular, as well as the cackling geese. And then in terms of ducks, here on the Yukon Delta, it's either probably what people call black duck, which is a scoter, or pintail are probably the next most harvested bird.
And I think just this past spring, you put people harvest eggs as well, right?
Yes. Yes, people do harvest eggs. And it also depends on the time of year that people go out. Gulls normally start laying a little bit earlier than the geese and ducks, and so a lot of people harvest gull eggs, but otherwise goose eggs are a big target as well, just because they're a larger egg.
And you also, you know, recommend to and work with the local communities about, you know, doing the 30-day
correct
moratorium. Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's correct. So I talk with the Waterfowl Conservation Committee of AVCP, and as well as talk to subsistence hunters in coastal communities and other communities, as well does AVCP, and we come to consensus on when we think that 30-day closure should begin.
And it went particularly smooth this year?
It did, yeah. We had agreement on when it should begin, and being that we had kind of a colder spring, it was a little bit later this year than it had been the previous couple years. I believe it was June 6th is when that 30-day closure began, and everyone pretty much seemed in agreement with it.
And is what about the – how are things going on the bird flu front?
So, thankfully, we were worried about it this spring, but thankfully, it does not seem like the highly pathogenic avian influenza was very prevalent on the Yukon Delta this year. We did have one gull that tested positive, but otherwise, all the other birds that we tested came back negative, which was surprising to us. Just means that they died of other causes, natural causes, and not highly pathogenic avian influenza. So that's good news. And given the extent of avian influenza in 2022, it was nice to have kind of a calm year, not having to worry about a lot of birds perishing due to it. We did collect some blood samples from speckled eiders, emperor geese, and cackling geese to see how many birds have immunities from this strain of avian influenza, but we have not gotten those results back yet.
And was it your folks or someone else regarding there was some a couple of weeks ago in the Dillingham area that did turn out to be positive for H5N1?
Was that the I saw an email about it. Was that the MERS that
yes,
you're talking about?
The common
yeah.
MERS.
Yeah, so that was the first time I had heard about it. I just got a brief email saying that a bunch of MERS were found dead and tested and came back positive for avian influenza, which was surprising to me. It might have been a few kittiwakes as well, and most of them tested positive. So, unfortunately, it reached that population and is starting to have some die-offs in them.
And how does it compare, if you know at all, the fact of in the YK Delta compared to nationally this year for the avian flu?
So last year, so this strain of avian influenza started in 2021
okay.
and slowly made its way across the United States, and just last 2022 was the first summer where it really hit the populations here. And so it was especially bad in 2022 because very few of the populations had immunities. And so we saw a lot of die-offs. And then those birds then migrated back down to lower 48. And birds that had not been introduced to the strain or, you know, been exposed, that's the correct word, exposed to the avian influenza, then ended up getting exposed, and there were quite a few populations that were hit from avian influenza in localized areas in the lower 48, and now it seems like there's some population immunity among most waterfowl that returned to the Yukon Delta based on the fact that very few perished this year, and we just didn't see the effects. So it seems like they had a pretty quick population immunity, community spread, and so now we're not seeing negative effects as long as that the strain doesn't mutate and then cause more issue.
And is there anything else that folks in the YK Delta should know about waterfowl? Anything else, something that I didn't ask or mention?
There's a few other things. So recently U.S. Fish and Wildlife did get VF Grace to agree not to send lead shells to stores on the Yukon Delta anymore, and that's really good news. Lead shot has been illegal to be used on Yukon Delta since 1996 or so, but the distributors kept sending it out here because stores were ordering it, and then people subsequently kept using lead shot, and there was a study last summer that showed that ingestion of lead pellets from ammunition by spectrolites, which are a threatened species, was at the same level as it was 10 years ago and 20 years ago when these studies started. So they did it every 10 years. And so that just shows that lead shot continued to be used in these environments because it continued to be accessible to these birds and then killing these birds through ingested lead shot. And so Fish and Wildlife finally got the distributor of ammunition to stop sending it to Yukon Delta. So now only non-toxic shot should be available on the Yukon Delta. And AVCP has sent a letter to the distributor thanking them for following the Yukon Delta's wishes to not have lead shot available. So that's kind of bigger new news.
Yeah, that is. Is there anything else?
I believe that's it for now. Birds have been migrating. We had our first hard frost a couple days ago, and it seems like other than some swans and a few ducks, a lot of birds have migrated out, and people are saying that a lot more birds are showing up in Oregon and California, so most of our birds have left, unfortunately.
Thank you for being here.
Yep, my pleasure.
That's KYUK's Francisco Martinez-Cuello speaking with Brian Daniels, the bird biologist at the Yukon Delta National Wildlife Refuge. Join us tomorrow for Coffee in Yuktoon.
This is Coffee at KYUK.
That's Coffee, weekday mornings at 8:40. Catch up on old episodes by visiting kyuk.org or find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcast.